Hello, everybody, and welcome back once again to the Road to Revolution podcast, My Journey with Linkin Park. I am your host, Billy Arciello, and I feel like I have to reintroduce myself here because it has been so long since we did one of these. And I'm sorry about that, but I should tell you that life got completely insane. Although if you're listening to this new one right now, you know life is currently insane. A lot of us are still indoors with the coronavirus pandemic going on. So I figured while I'm inside, there's no better idea than to revitalize a podcast that about seven people listen to. But here we are. But yeah, the last year and a half of my life have been absolutely crazy for both good and bad reasons that I won't get into too much here. But the show is back. I'm very happy to be doing this again. I've missed it. I keep thinking about it and I say, I'm going to do another one. And then I don't. But I sat here today on my couch staring at the Netflix void. And I said, you know what? Screw it. It's time. We got to do this. So here we are. We're doing episode number 10 or show number 10. This is episode number 9. But show number 10 of the Road to Revolution podcast. And today we are going to talk about the first show I went to on the summer tour in 2004. Now, you might remember the last episode, or if you don't, because it's been a good while. Last episode, we covered the show in January of 2004 in New York. That was the Meteor World Tour with POD and Story of the Year and Hoobastank. Now, this one is the summer tour. This was the big summer festival tour. Linkin Park headlined with Korn and Snoop Dogg. They all co-headlined together, and then also on the main stage, they had The Used and Less Than Jake, and then side stage had a ton of great bands. Less Than Jake was on the main stage. Side stage was Funeral for a Friend. I think Mobb Deep was on there for a bit. Street Drum Corps, I think, was on there for a while. There's a bunch of great bands on this tour. It was amazing. I sure hope it was amazing, because as you'll hear on this and this subsequent six episodes that follow this, this is all I did for about a week and a half, 2 weeks of my life in the summer of 2004. I went to this tour. I just graduated high school earlier in the summer, and I took any money that I'd been given as a graduation gift, and I just followed them around the upper East Coast down to the middle East Coast, and saw them in this first show, which was in Massachusetts. And then you'll see as we go down, I kind of just made my way up and down the north and northeast coast to the Middle East Coast. But this first one is Boston, or Mansfield, Massachusetts. It was at the Tweeter Center on July 29th, 2004. And let's get the detail semantics out of the way first. The set list, this is the first time I'd seen them do this new set list. They were doing this set just for the summer tour. And it was really good. It was a good mix of, I mean, the only two albums they had, and then they did some mashups of some other songs. So they opened with Don't Stay, then Lying From You, Paper Cut, Points of Authority, With You, and then into Runaway. And here we get to that first little medley mashup thing they did, where they did Step Up, which was an old Hybrid Theory EP song, into Nobody's Listening off of Meteora. And then they mashed that into It's Going Down, which was a song that Linkin Park had did with the Executioners about 2 years earlier. And then they did Somewhere I Belong and Figure 9, and then From the Inside and Breaking the Habit and Numb. They had very heavy on the Meteora tracks on this tour, rightfully so. This was the big summer tour for Meteora a year and a half later. But they did Numb and Faint in the end, and then A Place in My Head, which closed out the main set. And then they came back and they did Crawling and Wish, which was really cool because it was a Nine Inch Nails cover. And I think to that point, I can't remember if they had done any cover songs or if I'd seen them do any cover songs. I think they'd done one or two here or there previously, but I think this was the first cover I'd ever seen them do, which was really, really cool, especially because it's a great Nine Inch Nails song if you've never heard it. And then they closed, as they always have up to this point, with One Step Closer. Now, this was, if I remember correctly, the first big concert I drove myself to outside of New York, where I grew up. This was, like I said, in Boston. So it was a couple hours, about 4 hours, four and a half, give or take. And I went up there with my friend Alex. And just to date this a little bit, this was 2004. So We tried to find something to keep us occupied on the drive up, and that thing we landed on was borrowing my dad's portable DVD player, and we would listen to movie commentaries, which now you can imagine is as easy as, you know, ripping that track off the DVD and putting it on your phone or stream it from somewhere if they have it. But the only way to do this was, at the time, get a portable DVD player that plugs into your car via an aux cable and listen to them that way. So we got in the car, we popped in Donnie Darko, and we put the commentary on, and we listened to that for the first, you know, 2-ish hours of the drive. And the rest of the drive was pretty silly and making jokes and laughing. And my friend Alex is notorious amongst our friends for his laugh. It's very infectious. It always has been. Whenever we'd go to movies in high school, he'd be the one to be like, if it's a comedy, I want to sit next to him, because he would just make the movie better. There's a tangent here, but I'll tell it real quick. About a year or so before, there's that movie Stuck on You with Matt Damon and Greg Kinnear that had come out, and I'd seen it with Alex and another friend of ours, and it was the funniest movie in the world at that moment. I just thought it was so damn funny. And then a couple of months later or so, when it came out on DVD, I bought it. I was like, well, I need this movie because it was so funny. I'm going to want to rewatch it. And I rewatched it at home by myself and just wasn't as good. So just a testament to how infectious his laughter could be. He actually made that movie pretty good. But I digress. So Alex went with me to that show. We finally get up to Boston about 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon. And we get in line for the pit, and we had no preconceived notion of wanting to be in the front row or anything. We just knew we had pit tickets and we wanted to be up front, or not up front. We wanted to just be as close as we could be. And we knew driving up from New York, we weren't going to get there super duper early. So we'll get there when we get there. And if we get close to the front, cool. Well, we get there and we meet my friend Sal, who at this point I didn't know Sal super well. And if you're a Linkin Park fan, if you're listening to this, chances are you may know who Sal is. Sal is kind of one of the legendary Linkin Park fans, if you will. He's been to more Linkin Park shows than I have. I ended up at 34. I think he was somewhere in the 50s. But I had met him at other shows in passing. But the first show I remember meeting him and talking to him at was actually Papa Roach in New York a couple of weeks before this show. And we had gone to the meet and greet before the show, and we had I saw his Linkin Park tattoos. I was like, hey, I think I've seen you at other shows. And we had just gotten to talking, and I was like, hey, are you doing any shows on Product Revolution? And he said, yeah, I'm going to go to about 10. I said, oh, cool. I have plans for 7. He's like, awesome. If you see me there, say what's up. So lo and behold, we get in line for the pit in Boston, and right there in front of us is Sal. And there wasn't much of a line for the pit at that point either. So we were right up front, within a couple of 10 people or so. So we definitely got on the rail, which was great. But we just spent the whole time BSing with Sal and talking. He's from New York too, so similar mindsets and senses of humor. So we all got along and had fun the whole time waiting. And then the show started. And as I mentioned the set list earlier, the set list was just absolutely amazing. Like, high energy. The opener with Don't Stay, like, they had the lights timed to the da-na-na-na-na. Like, the lights would flicker and flash in time with the guitar hits. And they changed the intro a little bit so it wasn't exactly how it was on the album. But they had a huge curtain up in front of the stage, so they were all shadows, which was just so flippin' cool. Now, if you want to see any of what this looks like, there is a professionally shot version of one of the shows from this tour, which we will talk about later because it's one of the shows I went to, and there's a story on that. But if you want to see anything from this tour, to see what that stage setup looked like in Camden, New Jersey, which was the August 3rd show on that tour, somebody, I don't know, years later got their hands on a professionally shot version of the show, so you could see what this show looked like, what their stage setup was. So if you want to see anything I'm talking about, just go on YouTube. The amazing guys at LP Live years ago, I might say 10 years ago or so now, found it and they put it up, and it's the full show. And it's a pro shot. I think it's the venue cameras that will, like, project the show onto the side screens, like for the venue. It's that camera feed with soundboard audio. So it is like, the only negative thing you could say on it is it's 2004, so it's it's good for what it is. It's not HD, so it looks good, but you know, we're spoiled now with 1080, 4K, 8K stuff. Well, not 8K yet, but we'll get there. But you could see what this show looked like, which was just really, really cool. An amazing production, which I guess was good because I had already had tickets for 6 more shows on this tour. So I guess paid off that this first one went really, really well. But when they came out with Don't Stay, just crazy energy. The place blew up. And that's when I knew, I was like, all right, I made the right choice. Like getting tickets to all these shows and spending my graduation money like this was a very smart idea. Financially smart, probably not. You know, some other people I went to school with probably put it away or put it in savings or bought a car or, you know, did something smart with it. But I regret nothing because, as you'll see in a couple episodes, this little investment of my time and money that summer ended up being one of the coolest and most memorable stories of my life. We'll get to that in a few episodes because this was show number one that I'm talking about right now. That moment and story is show number 5, I believe, on my version of that tour. So we're a couple episodes out from that, but this one was in Boston. And other than that, I don't have a lot of other specific memories about this show. I remember just being on the front row for that entire show was amazing. It was the first time I'd been front row for Korn, or I'd never seen Snoop Dogg ever before. And Snoop Dogg was actually, he was really good at this first show. But as I learned over the next couple of shows, his show got very repetitive and very dull. So I kind of grew to not like him as much through that show. And he's great now. I still like Snoop, but man, his show was not built to be seen many times, at least in a row, which I learned the hard way. And then the Used were amazing. I'd seen them a few times before, but they were amazing on this show. And they were just starting to play new stuff from their second album, which wasn't even out yet. So it was cool to see a change in their set a little. And then Less Than Jake, that was like a surprise bonus because like you never think a band like Less Than Jake would go on tour with Linkin Park. But they were really big about wanting to bring a variety of bands. Like you had punk, you had ska, you had metal, you had rap, you had rap rock, you had all this stuff mixing together. So having them all together like that was if you liked all that music, it was like $50 for a ticket or so, and you couldn't find a better value. So for someone like me who likes all of those genres and more, it was a steal. So, Less Than Jake are just so much fun live, you know, to be at that show and look around and see people who don't necessarily know anything about Less Than Jake or don't listen to ska or punk and just be there for maybe Korn or Linkin Park or Snoop. So being very specific into rap or rap rock or hard rock or metal. And then these dudes come out with trumpets and a horn section. And you're just like, what's happening? Like watching these people not realize what they were getting into and then be like, oh, these guys are actually really good. It was kind of cool to see that change in the audience. Like the first minute or so, a lot of people are like, what the? All right. And then by the end, you know, their half hour is over and those people are like, man, they were great. And that would happen at every single stop on that tour that I went to. You know, the consistency with Less Than Jake was if people didn't know who they were, they knew and loved them by the end of it. And they brought it every single day, which to open a main stage like that at 2 in the afternoon is a bit daunting because you're in front of an audience that people don't or may not necessarily be familiar with you. So I give them all the credit in the world for a million things. Less Than Jake's amazing. I've seen them so many times since then, and they were always just so great. But enough of my rambling about this show. I think that's a good run for this first episode back. I don't have many specific memories about that show other than what I've already talked about. But like one little extra postscript about that experience was on the way back. If you're not familiar with the Northeast layout, to get back to New York from Boston, you have to drive through Connecticut. And on our way back, we had just gotten in the Connecticut state line from the Boston area or Massachusetts. And I was still young and I wasn't a bad driver or a reckless driver. I just had a heavy foot. So I would drive a little faster than I should have probably. And late night, it was probably midnight or so, 12:30, get pulled over, in Connecticut doing, I think, like 75 and a 60 or something like that. And cop pulls me over, and this is the first time I'd ever been pulled over. Never got pulled over before, so I didn't know what to do. Obviously, I knew to pull over, but I didn't specifically know that you had to pull over to the right. So I pulled over to the left, to the median, which got me an even bigger fine. And for a 17-year-old kid who just spent all of his money on seeing his favorite band and then some seven times around the country, which he had to also drive to those shows in different states, getting a, if I remember correctly, $460 ticket or $480, something like that. It was not ideal, but nice postscript to that story. Being that I didn't have the money, months later, I fought it. I submitted that, you know, I'd like to appear in the traffic court in Connecticut and fight it, which didn't happen until months later. This was in July, and the traffic court date was in October, I think. So I drove up there, and I didn't know how the process would go. So I had the money with me. And my biggest worry, being such a young driver, was I didn't want to get the points, because that would make my insurance skyrocket. And I just didn't want that. And plus, the more points you get, if you get too many points, you could lose your license. And I was like, I just got my car. The last thing I want to do is rack up points. So I get up there, and I'm like nervous. I'm like, well, what if they say, you know, you can't fight this and you got to pay the fine and you're going to get the points? It's like, this is a waste of a day and time and effort and money. But I get up there and they call me up, and they go, all right, well, since you're out of state, because I was a New York driver, I wasn't going to get any points. And they gave me an offer of $60 to plead guilty. And that was it. Nothing else. So I had the money with me, so I gave them the $60, and I left and drove back to New York. And that was that. So all things considered, I would say a most of a win. You know, I still had to plead guilty to speeding, which people do. You know, I don't do it anymore because I've grown up and I want to get there safely, not quickly. But yeah, coming home with most of that money was a nice little bonus, especially for 17-year-old me, which I went and spent on a new cell phone, like right away. On the way home, didn't even go home. Went to the store and said, I want to buy a new phone. And this is back in the Nextel days, so I bought a new Nextel, and I was so proud of it. Had a camera on it and everything, and that button on the hinge that would make the screen flip up. Yeah, I loved that phone. I still have some of the pictures, like on my Facebook and on my hard drives on my computer. Man, that thing took garbage photos. I think the resolution was like, you know, 240 by 144 or something. It was something terrible. But again, I'm digressing. But that is going to do it for today's episode. I thank you so much for coming back and listening. If you did come back and listen, and if you haven't, that's fine too. I've been gone long enough. But if you do come back and join me for the next episode, I greatly appreciate that. Like I said, there's going to be more stories from this summer tour. The next one we're going to talk about is the very next day. So the show from today's episode is July 29th, 2004. Our next show we'll talk about is July 30th, 2004, which took place in New Jersey and had a surprise guest at that show, join Linkin Park, who we will talk a bit more about on the next one. But for now, I will bid you adieu. My name is Billy, and this has been My Road to Revolution.